Monday to Friday, 2:30 to 4. It is The Blitz here on AM 1450 KATE. Mitch Widmeyer here with you, joining us over the phone lines. He hops on once a week. We're always appreciative for the time that he sets aside for us. He is Arif Hassan. He covers the Vikings for Zone Coverage and the Daily Norseman. You can find his work through those two outlets. Go to zonecoverage.com. Click on the Vikings tab at the top of the page. Thank you, as always, Arif. The Vikings, of course, coming off a really impressive 17-point win against the Rams on Sunday. I wasn't even looking forward to Mike Zimmer's presser and where he would have to name a starting quarterback. It seemed this was like the first time in a while, in a few weeks, I think, where it was pretty evident that Case Keenum would be starting on Thanksgiving, correct?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, not only did Keenum have a pretty wonderful game and a dominant win, it's a short week, and so it really wouldn't have made any sense to name Bridgewater the starter when really there was only going to be one effective day of practice.
How did you assess the play of Case Keenum on Sunday when you went? I'm sure you probably already went back and watched some of it. What stood out to you?
Well, the beginning and the end of the game, I thought he did a really good job. Just like in the Washington game, he did a pretty decent job at those moments of leading receivers and finding ways to create yards after the catch, but there's a good chunk in the middle where it really felt like he was being somewhat of a mediocre quarterback, aside from that brilliant play to Case Keenum or to Adam Thielen when he was sacked almost three times. But you know, there were moments where you felt like he was doing the exact opposite, where he's limiting the yards after catch of his players and stuff like that. But for the most part, you know, he did a better job avoiding the kinds of mistakes that lead to multiple turnovers. There was one moment where, you know, a near interception that was stopped by Kyle Rudolph was a bit hairy. But for the most part, you know, it really felt like the kind of game you'd expect from somebody who's contending, who's a playoff-type quarterback. So, you know, that's something that we haven't seen a full game of, I think, from Keenum, aside from, you know, against the Bucks. And it's good. It's not to say that he did as well as he did in that first half of the Washington game, but he also avoided a lot of the mistakes that plagued him in the second half of that game.
Mike Zimmer said yesterday at his presser that Case Keenum has big you-know-what. I don't know if I can say that on radio. I'm just going to err on the side of safety. I've had someone email me before saying they didn't appreciate that I said the word hell on air. So if I can't say that, or if it's frowned upon, I'm assuming I can't say what Mike Zimmer said at his press conference. But you know what I'm referring to, and it was in light of some of the throws and the chances that Case Keenum takes, Arif. And it's something that you and I, we brought it up all the way back in the preseason, and it's something that isn't common with a lot of backup quarterbacks, that they come in with enough confidence that they're willing to air it out down the field. They're willing to take some of those chances. Usually with a backup, you see more hesitancy, correct?
Yeah. He plays a lot of guts, I think is a good way to put it.
Hey, there you go.
he's somebody who definitely is willing to take chances. A lot of backups are told explicitly by the coaches to take care of the ball, to manage the game, to get the first down and not much more. And not only was Keenum not told, to do that, he was told to play kind of within his comfort zone. It's something he actually didn't do last year with the Rams, but something he did a lot with the Texans, which I think speaks a lot to, Jeff Fisher's coaching style and what it's produced. He's a very aggressive quarterback. It's interesting. Not only do you not see that very often in backup quarterbacks, you also don't see it in quarterbacks that have like clear arm strength issues like he does.
I asked Jim Suhan earlier, and I'll ask you now, just curious, I'm trying to pull together some ideas and some thoughts. How do you think this ends with Case Keenum? Because he was great against the Rams, and he's far exceeded the expectations I had put in place for him all the way back in week two, or even after that game in week two when we found out Sam Bradford would be gone for a substantial amount of time. I can't imagine the Vikings envision him as a franchise quarterback moving forward. I've actually seen some Viking fans now take the stance that they hope the Vikings give a chance to Case Keenum next year and moving onward. So how do you think it ends with Case Keenum?
I think that the Vikings won't really have a chance to offer him a contract. I think that he's going to be offered a contract where he doesn't have to compete with somebody, because I think the Vikings are going to extend Teddy Bridgewater. And so he could either be sort of a bridge quarterback. If Paxton Lynch doesn't work out in Denver, you know, they might be able to sign Case Keenum, draft another guy, wait a couple of years, that sort of thing. Or, you know, there's, I mean, any number of other teams that could be playing themselves out of the ability to draft a quarterback, like Jacksonville, that sorely need one. And so I think that, you know, his prospects with those teams are a lot better than his prospects with the Vikings, who might not be able to offer him, you know, the $15, $16, maybe $18 million contract that could be waiting for him in free agency. So I'm sure, you know, the Vikings would love to have a quarterback competition between him and Teddy Bridgewater. I'm not sure that that's something that's going to happen.
Find his work in at zonecoverage.com or through the Daily Norseman. Arif Hasan, our guest this afternoon. What impressed you the most on Sunday, Arif? Was it the overall performance by the defense suffocating that high-octane L.A. Rams offense? Was it Adam Thielen going bananas again? Was it Anthony Harris filling in for the injured Andrew Sindeo? If I had you pick one element of what impressed you the most on Sunday, what would it be?
I think the most dynamic individual performance had to be Adam Thielen's, just because, I mean, he's clearly establishing himself as a top receiver in the league. And not only did the LA Rams have a really high-powered offense, they also have a really good defense. And so for him to be able to go off like that consistently against not just like bad defenses, but really good defenses like the Rams, that's probably the best individual performance we saw in that game. But maybe the most surprising in terms of how impressive it was, I think, is Anthony Harris, who's really competing next year to be a starting safety next to Harrison Smith. Something that, you know, I don't think we really anticipated based off of his play last year, which was pretty mistake prone and, you know, a pretty big issue, not like an enormous issue, but a pretty big issue for the Vikings when Andrew Sindejo was out. So now that he's really playing as not just a starting quality safety, but like a really high quality starting safety, this is the first time that I think the Vikings have somebody on their roster that can legitimately compete for that spot against Andrew Sindejo next year.
If there were some skeptics of the legitimacy of this Vikings team, Arif, after what they showed us Sunday against the LA Rams, that almost has to be put aside. Now, maybe there were even some fans, I'm sure there were, that they weren't skeptics necessarily, but maybe they were hesitant because they remember the 5-0 start last year. This is a vastly different team, and I think the first thing you could point at is the offensive line. But for those who did exist as skeptics of the Vikings and whether or not this was legit or whether or not it was fraudulent, I think Sunday's performance, it kind of validates that this is a pretty dang good team, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. This is probably the biggest test the Vikings have had, at least in some time, and maybe the best team that they've beaten, assuming that Saints team that they played, you know, is was a completely different team, which it certainly seems like it is. And so, you know, this is a team that also hasn't had, done a decent job against the top teams it went up against, but certainly did a good job putting away a lot of bad teams. And so for the Vikings to go up against a team of that caliber, which top five in Football Outsiders DVOA, which is, you know, an advanced statistical ranking of teams based off of, like, success rate and explosiveness, you know, for them to be able to put them away in such dominating fashion, and remember, I mean, they also had two missed kicks, too, so the score could have even been even further away. I think it really demonstrates that the Vikings are a team that not only can, you know, take care of bad teams, but can go up against teams that they should meet in the playoffs and just take care of business without much drama.
Always enjoy his time with us on the program. He is Arif Hasan, covers the Vikings for Zone Coverage and the Daily Norseman. Tomorrow in Detroit, taking on the Lions. Do you enjoy your favorite team playing on a holiday? And on top of that, playing the early game, I feel like it dictates potentially your attitude for the rest of the day. So do you enjoy, like, I love watching sports on Thanksgiving, Christmas, but I've always been lenient about wanting my favorite teams playing on said holidays, because if they were to go down, and I don't like to be pessimistic, but if they were to lose, I feel like it would dictate my attitude for the rest of the day.
Yeah, I think for me, it always gives me something to talk about, to, like, steer conversations away from maybe more uncomfortable topics. And so I always kind of like, you know, people love to complain. So if the Vikings did poorly, we could talk about that. I'm totally okay to talk about that, even if it makes my mood a little bit sour. And of course, if the Vikings did really well, there's no question I love to talk about that. So I think there's that benefit. It gets kind of annoying, especially because, you know, my work kind of revolves around people seeing it, and, you know, people are not going to be reading, you know, post-game recaps on Thanksgiving or on Christmas. They've got much more important stuff to do. And so I'm just like sitting here with a piece I'm required to write. That part is a little bit frustrating. I think more frustrating than having to deal with carrying the result with me for the rest of the day and not having any control over the outcome. I think it's net worth it because it's always nice to have a topic of conversation. But, you know, there are some things that get to me about it.
Fair enough. I like that answer. What matchups are you looking forward to watching unfold? It's a weekly question I ask you. The Vikings, Lions have already played this year. Detroit won at U.S. Bank Stadium 14-7. This time around, what are those key matchups you'll be watching?
For sure, I think Golden Tate, who did really well against the Vikings last year, is somebody I'm going to be watching, and he's primarily their slot receiver in three wide sets, so we're going to see how he does against Terrence Newman. And Mackenzie Alexander sounds like he's healthy again. In the last game, the Vikings held him down to 29 yards, but I'm not so sure that they'll be able to consistently keep him down. So I'm looking forward to what's happening there, especially if he, you know, plays on the outside and goes up against Xavier Rhodes. Other than that, you know, individual matchups from the Vikings offense to the defense, I think some of them are really kind of boring. That defensive line of that Ezekiel Ansah is just falling apart. And some of them are really interesting. Darius Slay is a top 10 corner, and having, you know, him go up against Adam Thielen or Stephon Diggs is going to be really, really exciting, especially with Glover Quinn, who I think he's got a Pro Bowl vote from me too. Like, you know, you've got Harrison Smith and Glover Quinn both in the same division. I think that, you know, that's going to be a really exciting sort of, like, what's going to happen with that secondary, what's going to happen with those receivers. It's going to be exciting to see how that plays out. And, you know, that defensive line is poor. Sometimes that is exciting to watch. Sometimes, you know, is it going to be Latavius Murray or Jerick McKinnon who's going to get the best opportunity to get 100 yards? I don't know, but that should be fun too.
If the Vikings were to win tomorrow, would it all but lock up the North in your estimation? Obviously, people are going to say it's a huge game. It's Thanksgiving, nationally televised. It's two NFC North rivals. But this is a critical one because if the Lions win, they've now beat Minnesota twice. They have the tiebreaker. And all of a sudden, for how good the Vikings have been playing, Detroit would only be one game behind them with a fairly lenient schedule the rest of the way. If the Vikings win, it's 1-1 in the series for the season with the Lions, and the Vikings would have a pretty nice cushion, and it would just be hard to imagine them blowing said cushion the rest of the way.
Yeah, no, for sure. The Lions would probably still hold a decent tiebreaker over the Vikings, if the Vikings win. Just because right now the Lions are 3-0 against the division, I think, and the Vikings have yet to play a divisional game. And you know, we've got this question, you know, if Aaron Rodgers is going to be ready to play in Week 16. Personally, I think, you know, that he shouldn't play. But you know, even without that, the Vikings. If they win, I think it just makes it so difficult for the Lions to pull back. The Vikings would have to lose out, I think, two more games for the Lions to win the rest of their games for that to even be a question. So it is going to be, I think, a pretty critical game for the NFC North seedings. It's all but determinative, like you said. It is still possible if the Vikings win and the Lions lose for the Lions to end up with the division just because sort of the quirks of what it would take to get them back to an even record, which would likely include divisional losses for the Vikings. But for the most part, I think that it'll swing the odds of who wins the division from, it's probably, 70-30 Vikings now? It'll swing the odds to, like, 95-5. It'll be huge. I don't think any other game on the schedule swings playoff odds as much as the made-up probabilities I just came up with.
We'll finish with our off notes. Do you feel bad for Blair Walsh at all?
I do. I don't feel vindictive about his game against Seattle. He made a bunch of kicks that he wasn't supposed to make, actually, in that game, like a 53-yarder in the cold, and never gets any credit for it. And I don't think he gave himself credit for it because he certainly got in his own head in the following season. But, you know, it's not as if, you know, he had any malice towards the team or anything like that. He's going to carry this for, like, the rest of his life, and now he's just got more, like, game-breaking moments on his back. That's not great. I kind of resent that the Vikings couldn't do well with him, but I don't resent him for it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for those who are wondering why I'm referencing Blair Walsh, if they missed it on Monday night, he had an opportunity on it. It was a long field goal, a 52-yarder, to send the game against the Falcons for Seattle into overtime. The weird thing to me about that, Arif, was of all the possibilities for him missing.
It was short.
Yes,
yeah.
And look, like, right, it was a 52-yarder, but they said on the broadcast, I mean, it's not a short kick, but they said on the broadcast there was hardly any wind, if any wind whatsoever, and I never thought he'd miss that kick short. And even when he kicked it, I thought he piped it right down the middle. So if I gave you, you know, he misses left, misses right, it's blocked, hits an upright, or if it's short, would the last option, if I had you line him up in probability as to, okay, he's either going to miss right, miss left, it's blocked, it hits an upright, or it's short, the last one I would choose is missing short on that kick?
Yeah, absolutely. The one thing that we know that he has is a leg that can kick it, that can boom it. We've seen so many kickers take these 55-yard field goals, which, again, are not, you know, easy kicks to make, and clear it with, like, room to spare. I mean, we've seen both Zuerlein and Matt Prater, you know, just to have like 5 feet of clearance on these types of kicks, and you know, he was inches short. It feels like, you know, Blair Walsh has one of the strongest legs, it feels like, in the league, and so for him to kick it short is just like mind-boggling. Like, I, you know, blocked field goals almost never happen, and I agree with you that seemed more likely than him kicking it short on a 50-plus or 52-yard field goal. So, that's a new one.
If I had you, speaking of a new one, 5 interceptions in the first half for Nathan Peterman. If I had you,
oh boy.
If I had you summarize the debut of Nathan Peterman in just one word, what would that word be?
I don't want to say karmic because I don't have anything against Nathan Peterman, but appropriate. I don't know. Like, it was obviously a terrible decision to start him before. You know, he's had a 5 interception game, and sure, I think two of them probably weren't his fault. That leaves 3 to be accounted for in the first half. I've always felt like Tyrod Taylor has been a super underappreciated quarterback, especially by his own organization, that signed him to an extension and then traded away all his weapons. You know, of course he's not going to look good with a rookie and like a new receiver that showed up just partway through the season. Jordan Matthews, and then another new receiver that's going to show up, Kelvin Benjamin. Yeah, of course he's not going to look good without his top target. So, yeah, it felt like the Bills got what they deserved. Nathan Peterman didn't. That's not fair to him, but the Bills got what they deserved.
And now they're going back to Tyrod Taylor for this week and against Kansas City. It seems like a very awkward situation. We'll follow along with that one. We'll leave on this. Dan Graziano of ESPN had an article posted this morning that read, and I quote, Arif, NFL MVP, why it's Carson Wentz's award to lose. Your thoughts?
Oh, Jesus. I mean, quarterback of the most winning team in football, it's easy to see why. He is perhaps not one of the 5 top-performing quarterbacks by a lot of statistical measures, DVOA, just in the yards per attempt passer rating. You know, he's up there in QBR. I think he's number 4. But, you know, he's not the best quarterback right now in the NFL. He just happens to be the best quarterback that is playing for a winning team. Hurts me to say that. Really hurts me to say that, and you knew that. I'm not surprised that he's in the MVP race, because the MVP is not about who the best player in football is. That's Aaron Donald. And it's not about who the best quarterback in football is right now. That's Tom Brady. It's about, you know, which quarterback is on a winning team that is exceeding expectations the most. So, Carson Wentz.
I love the stubbornness. Find his work, zonecoverage.com. Click the Vikings tab at the top of the page. Thank you, as always, Arif.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We'll finish up with Friday's spread. We'll get you your Big Ten line picks. Over-unders next.